Hi guys, and welcome to another SSI True Crime Podcast. This is episode 5, and I am your host, Hazel. So today's case, we are going to be talking about Susie Lampleu, who went missing from Fulham in 1986. So let's get on with the case. Susanna Jane Lampleu, known as Susie, was born 3rd of May 1961. In Cheltenham, England. Susie lived with her parents, Paul and Diana Lampleu, and her siblings. I didn't make a note of it, but I believe she had 3 siblings. I'm not sure. They lived in South London for most of Susie's childhood. Susie was described as a very loving girl who was always there for others when they were in distress. Her father, Paul, said she knew how to live life fully, but no one taught her how to be safe. So in 1986, Susie was living in Putney, but she worked in Fulham. She owned a 2-bedroom flat in Putney, and her career had seen her work on the famous QE2. If you don't know what the QE2 was, it's a cruise ship. And it's very big and very famous. And she was working there as a beautician. But now she was working as an estate agent for Sturgis Estate Agency on Fulham Road. And Susie had been working here for about a year and was doing well at her job. Her boss said that he had no complaints, that she followed all rules and regulations, and that he never had a problem with her. You know, she got on with her job, done it well, and yeah, she was the perfect little employee, really. So on Monday the 20th of July 1986, 25-year-old Susie woke up and got ready for work. On this day, she was wearing a grey skirt, peach blouse, a dark jacket and low stiletto heels. She left her flat and went to work. Her morning was normal and uneventful, but this would soon change. So at 12:30, Susie prepared to leave the office. She leaves her handbag there, but she takes with her her house key, her car keys, her purse, and it is believed the purse had £15 in it, and some credit cards. So Susie had a meeting at 12:45 with a Mr. Kipper at 37 Sherolds Road. I'm sorry if I pronounced that wrong. But this is only according to her diary. This Mr. Kipper has never been traced. Her diary said that is where she would be. So she is seen outside the property talking to a good-looking man. Now, that isn't me saying that. That is a quote from the witness. And the witness saw her get into her car. And that would be the last time Susie was ever seen. So first to raise the alarm was her manager, who rung Susie's mum when Susie failed to return to work after a meeting with Mr. Kipper. He thought maybe that she had popped home for some lunch, or that there had been a family emergency and she'd had to go home, and she'd forgotten to ring in. But he did think this was unlikely, as Susie was not one to just not go back to work without letting anyone know. So he just thought he'd double check. But obviously Susie's mum hadn't seen her, and she didn't know where she was either. So at 6:45 p.m, Susie's manager reported her disappearance to the police. And at 10 p.m, Susie's company car is found a mile away from her office. And it was found at Stevenage Road in Fulham. The handbrake was off, which in the UK is quite a big deal, actually. Like, most driving instructors and that teach you when you park, handbrake on. To have the handbrake off was a bit fishy, like maybe somebody got out of the car in a rush. The driver's door was unlocked, her keys were missing, but her purse was found in the glove box. The only fingerprints in the car were the ones that could be accounted for, which means they belong to either Susie herself or someone who is confirmed to have been in the car in the last few days. The position of the driver's seat did hint towards her not being the last person to drive it. Now, I'm not sure what that meant, because I couldn't find exactly what they meant by that, but I'm assuming it was further back than she had it, or maybe closer than she had it. It just didn't look like she was the last one to have drove it. The car was also very badly parked. And despite a large media coverage and high priority police search, Susie has never been found. And she remains missing without a trace. So in 1994, the High Court granted Susie's parents a ruling that means in February 1994, Susie Lampleau was legally declared deceased. The police since have DNA tested, I think it's over 800 unidentified bodies now, but have never been able to match any of them to Susie. Therefore, her body remains unfound. So now we're going to talk about a suspect, and then we'll go on to like a few theories and stuff. So the main suspect in the case is John Cannon. And in November 2002, John Cannon was named as a person of interest in the case. John is known as a sex offender and murderer. So John David Cannon was born on the 20th of February 1954. In 1968, 14-year-old John was put on probation for indecently assaulting a woman in a phone box in Erdington. He seemed to have learned from this mistake and went on to get married. Well, his then wife, Daphne Sargent, tried to leave him. He assaulted her in 1980. Less than a year later, in early 1981, he robbed a petrol station and a knitwear shop. While robbing the knitwear shop, he tied up the mother of the shop assistant using a pair of tights. He then raped the shop assistant, telling her that if she didn't let him, then he would stab her baby. He was convicted of rape in 1981 and served 5 years of the 8-year sentence. He was serving this prison term in HM Prison, Bristol, before he was transferred to a day release hostel at Wormwood Scrubs near Fulham in London. This is where he was when Susie went missing. His day release meant that he could work during the day and socialise, but he had to return to the hostel at night. After his release from prison, it was only 10 weeks, and this would have been October 1986, before he raped a woman at knife point in Reading, Berkshire. He was eventually linked to this case by semen DNA in 1988. A year later, in October 1987, he tried to abduct a 30-year-old Bristol businesswoman named Julia Holman. Although John had a gun, she managed to fight him off and would later identify him as her attacker. The next day, he abducted Shirley Banks. Shirley was 29 years old and a factory manager. John abducted her on the 8th of October 1987. Sometime after 7:40 p.m. She had been shopping at the Broadmead Centre, and I'm not sure if she was actually taken from there or near there, but Shirley's body was found 6 months later in a stream, which the stream is actually known as Dead Woman's Ditch. She was killed by being hit repeatedly by a rock on the head. Her car was actually found in John's garage, and it had been painted a different colour, but he claims that he bought this from a man at an auction. Bloodstains matching Shirley's blood type, so it didn't actually DNA match Shirley, it was just the same blood type as her, it couldn't be confirmed if it was her blood, was found on a raincoat he owned, and her thumbprint was found on a document inside his flat. In April 1989, John was jailed for life for murder and the attack of another two women. So John was actually linked to Susie's case because in prison his nickname was Kipper, which if you remember at the beginning of this podcast, Susie was actually meant to have a meeting with our Mr. Kipper. Might just be a coincidence, but Kipper isn't a name you come across a lot, so that is definitely interesting. His friends also said that he would visit wine bars in Fulham where Susie used to work, so he had probably met her at some point. John may have had use of a black or dark BMW, similar to what was seen when Susie was last seen. And Susie was last seen getting into a BMW with a man holding champagne, which led an ex-girlfriend of Cannon, Daphne Sargent, to say, "As soon as I heard about Susie, I knew it was John. It had all the hallmarks, right down to the champagne." Another girlfriend of his also said he had taken a strong interest in the case. In August 2010, a criminologist who had corresponded with Cannon said that DNA evidence linked Lampoon to a Ford Sierra that had been once used by Cannon. That was recovered during 2000. But it had a false license plate that was SLP386. Which people have suggested that this might relate to Susie, and because the SLP could stand for Susie Lampoon. And it could be linked to the year of her disappearance as well, because it was 386 and she went missing in 1986. In April 2001, police said that the number plate SLP386S had been placed on Banks's Mini by Cannon. If you remember, Shirley Banks was the woman that John had kidnapped and killed. And that 386 might be a grid reference, as the site that Banks' body was found is near Northing Line 386. And Norton Manor Barracks is near 30806 West. When the police interviewed Cannon about the significance of the number plate on the Mini, he acknowledged that the initials could stand for Susie Lampoon, but said a Bristol businessman from whom he bought the car for £100 was responsible for the death of Lampoon, Banks, and another woman. Asked if that businessman was him, he replied, "Yes." But then he immediately recanted that statement. The day before Susie disappeared, a female witness was so spooked when she saw a man staring intently through Sergius's, the estate agent's, window. And she made a mental note of his appearance because she thought this was a bit creepy. Like, how often do you walk down the road and see somebody staring intently through a window? And she later identified the man as Cannon. John's ex-girlfriend told police in 1990 that he had told her Susie's body was at Norton Barracks. But later, she retracted this. In December 1999, after a letter was sent to Lampoon's mother, Diane, but that's my mistake, it's Diana, claimed Susie was buried there. A 5-day search by more than 30 officers in and around the former site of the barracks. But in December 2000, they said that they had failed to find a body. In 2001, police searched the barracks again, but again found nothing. It was speculated that Norton Barracks might actually mean Norton Manor Royal Marines Barracks in Somerset, 8 miles from where Banks' body was found. In August 2010, they searched a field 3 miles from the site in Worcestershire after a witness remembered seeing a mound of earth there in 1986 when he was a teenager. The police used ground-penetrating radar and trenches were dug by the side of the road between Pershore and Drake's Broughton, Worcestershire. At the same time, they were also searching woodlands in Quantock Hills, where Shirley Banks's body had been found. In April 2001, a cellmate of John's said that Susie was buried under the patio of John's mother's house in Sutton, Coldfield. In October 2018, police officers returned to the house and dug up the garden. Again, nothing was found. So, John has never admitted to abducting Susie, and her body has obviously never been found. But I was reading in the Daily Mail that there were documents that pointed to a relationship between Susie and John, and that actually he had been stalking her after they broke up. Police did say they were looking into this theory, as Susie had been talking about a new man to her friends and family. She started off saying how charming and nice this man was, but that this changed when he kept making calls to Bristol, and she started worrying that he was married. She eventually told her friends and family that the man scared her, and that she was going to have lunch with him to tell him it was over. At the same time as this, John had been telling friends he had a special girlfriend in Fulham. John is described as a fairly attractive and a charmer, so he'd often meet women in bars, and they would never know that he had such a bad background and a criminal record, or that he was returning to, obviously, a hostel at night. Police think that maybe the Mr. Kipper meeting was a cover-up, and that Susie had actually gone to meet with John that day to end things with him, and that he had turned aggressive towards her for this, like he had when his wife had tried to leave him. But there is no evidence to back this up, this is just a theory. It is possible that John wasn't the mystery man, and that she'd gone to meet someone else that day. So, there is an interesting theory that Mr. Kipper is an anagram of kidnapper. And interestingly, the missing letters from Kipper to make it kidnapper is DNA. It's an unlikely theory, but it is an interesting theory. So there was another person of interest in the case, and his name was Steve Wright. He worked on the same cruise ship as Susie did. That would be the QE2. And in 2008, Steve was actually convicted of murdering 5 sex workers in the Ipswich area. He became known as the Suffolk Strangler. Although being a person of interest, there was actually no strong link ever found between him and Susie, apart from they used to work together. There was no evidence to support him being a suspect. It was just a coincidence, really. He worked with Susie. Susie goes missing. It's possible. I think that is highly unlikely, though. So, Susie's body has never been found, and no one has ever been charged. But police continue to search. The case is not closed. They are still working on it. I know recently they have been digging up a field, and a body was actually discovered nearby to this in a septic tank, but police have already stated that this is not related to Susie's case. So Diana and Paul, which were Susie's parents, started a charity in their daughter's name. This charity was called the Susie Lamplugh Trust. The trust was set up in 1986, which was the year Susie went missing. Before Susie went missing, the term personal safety didn't really exist, and Diana and Paul wanted to change that. The trust goes to schools and does talks to young people about keeping themselves safe. The trust also helps with keeping women especially safe in the workplace. The trust also established a missing persons unit, which is now the actual charity Missing People, which is obviously very widely known. They do a lot of work to bring better laws and regulations about stalking and giving women, especially, I suppose men as well, they mainly talk about women, the resources for if they're being stalked, how to get help. the Trust just does some amazing work at keeping people safe. If you're watching this on YouTube, I will leave a link to their website in the description box for you to go and check that out. You can download some leaflets and stuff from there. They have a recap of Susie's story. There's loads of very interesting information on there. It's definitely worth giving it a look. So both Diana and Paul received OBEs for their charity work, but they have both sadly died since, and they died without knowing what happened to Susie, which is incredibly sad. And that's the end of the case. That's all the information I have. Obviously, the case is still ongoing. The police are still looking. And fingers crossed that they can find Susie and finally bring someone to justice. If you have any information about this case, please contact the police or Crime Stoppers if you want to remain anonymous. Yes, it's been a long time, and I think Susie's family have the right to know what happened. Nobody just disappears. So thank you for listening. If you are listening to this on YouTube, don't forget to like this, subscribe, hit the bell so you get notifications when I post. And I will have another podcast coming hopefully next week, which is an exciting one. I'm not going to give a lot away, but it's going to be a little bit different. So keep an eye out for that. And yeah, thank you for listening. And catch you in the next one. Bye.